Kings of Macedonia, Alexander the Great, Alexander and the Siege of Gaza. Now, before Tyre fell to the Macedonians, envoys came from Darius offering an alliance and peace, as well as 10,000 talents as ransom for the release of his family. The Persian king offered to cede all his lands west of the Euphrates and give his daughter in marriage to Alexander. The Macedonian king consulted his close companions, and it was claimed that Parmenio declared that he would accept if he were Alexander, rather than risk what they had gained so far. To which the young king replied, he might also accept if he were Parmenio. Like the other stories of this sort, this one may be invented, and since Parmenio spent a lot of these months holding an independent command in Syria, we can't be sure that he was present for the meeting. As Alexander is made to point out in the answer he sent to Darius, he already controlled all the lands Darius had ceded. He had no need of the money after his recent gains, and could marry the king's daughter if he chose. There were obvious risks in continuing the war, but there were also risks in halting. Ancient states had a poor record in keeping long-term promises of peace and friendship, tending to cherish grudges and resume conflict when it was convenient. For the moment, the momentum was on Alexander's side, and losing this would be dangerous, especially as in terms of numbers he remained so heavily outmatched. Alexander rejected the offer and continued his march towards Egypt. The punishment inflicted on Tyre, like the sack of Thebes, was made deliberately appalling as a warning that resisting him was futile and virtual suicide. Such terror tactics often worked, but they also risked making resistance all the harder, since the enemy had nothing left to lose and may well fight to the last. Gaza lay in his path, the last significant obstacle before the desert route to Egypt. A few miles in from the coast, it was held by a Persian governor named Battus, or Betis, who commanded a force including a contingent of Arab mercenaries. The city stood on a high tell, an artificial hill created over the centuries as dust piled into ruins of earlier settlements, and it had strong walls. Arrian says that Battus was a eunuch, and a fragment of another source calls him fat and very dark skinned, which may be no more than the usual Greek distaste for such royal courtiers. His actions suggest that he was determined, capable leader, confident in the strength of his position, and very loyal to Darius. Such a challenge made Alexander all the more determined to capture the city, for fear that his reputation for invincibility would suffer. He had hoped that Gaza would capitulate or fall to a rapid assault, but the siege would actually take him 2 months. His light siege train of equipment that could be taken apart and reassembled proved inadequate, so heavier gear had to be brought by sea from Tyre. Hephaestion supervised this in another of his rare early appearances in the sources. The siege of Gaza is recorded as much less detail than the attack on Tyre. We are told that the softness of the soil made it harder to operate siege engines and towers, for they tended to bog down in the sand, but it made tunneling easier. The Macedonians built great mounds to carry the towers and the rams all around the city, according to Arrian, although since this would have been a mammoth task, perhaps the height varied. They also dug mines to go under the city wall. This is the first mention of this technique on the part of the Macedonian engineers, which was rare even in traditions of Eastern siege warfare. The only way to meet the threat was by countermining, but the defenders of Gaza either did not have the ability or the awareness of how to do that. All such siege works took time, and as usual, they were probably attacks to weaken the defenders. On one day, Alexander was conducting a sacrifice when a bird dropped something onto his head. Sources differ whether it was an eagle or a raven, and whether the projectile was a lump of dirt or excrement. His loyal seer, Aristander, provided a generally positive interpretation of what seemed to have been a bad omen, saying that it meant that the city would be taken, but the king should be careful today and stay out of the fighting. Soon afterwards, Battus launched a determined sally, driving the Macedonians away from one of the siege mounds in an effort to set fire to the siege engines. Ignoring the advice and forgetting it at this moment of crisis, Alexander led some of the Hypaspists in a counterattack that drove the enemy back. Curtius says that an Arab feigned surrender only to hack at the king's neck. Alexander was faster and severed the man's wrist, and presumably he was then finished off by Macedonians nearby. Thinking that this was the danger indicated by the omen, Alexander stayed with his men, only to be struck on the shoulder by an arrow shot by a bow or a bolt from a catapult that penetrated both shield and his cuirass. For a while, he stayed with his men, but started to bleed heavily and was on the verge of unconsciousness when carried to safety. Like Philip's injury at Methone, the wound was a serious one, at least according to our sources, but skillfully treated, the king's determination and strong constitution pulled him through. Father and son alike ran risks, although the quality of his armor and sheer luck preserved them, at least so far in Alexander's case. So we're going to have to wait for the heavy siege equipment to be brought by Hephaestion to finish this off before we can continue on to Egypt. Now the sources for this, The Politics by Aristotle, The Histories by Herodotus, Histories, 12 volumes, by Diodorus Siculus, Peloponnesian War by Thucydides, and The Lives by Plutarch, Philip and Alexander, Kings and Conquerors by Goldsworthy, History of Macedonia, Volume 1 and Volume 2 by Hammond, In the Shadow of Olympus, The Emergence of Macedonia by Borgia. Some additional sources for the sections on Alexander rules would include, of course, Arians, The Campaigns of Alexander, In the Footsteps of Alexander the Great by Michael Wood, The Wars of Alexander the Great by Haeckel, and The Story of Alexander's Empire by Mahaffey. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.